So good morning to all our viewers all over the world, and thank you very much for joining us today. We're here this morning to present a Euractiv event held with the support of Huawei, which will take the form of a panel discussion entitled Towards a New Marshall Plan for Europe, the Role of ICT. This, of course, relates to Commission President von der Leyen's intention to put in place a fund for Europe's recovery and make the most of the European budget to leverage the huge investment needed to rebuild the single market after the coronavirus crisis. Of course, this bids the question of what role will technology play in Europe's recovery plans? How important will technology be in kick-starting European economies and driving recovery towards a more modern, resilient, green and sustainable Europe? Well, joining us here today to discuss these issues and more, I'm very happy to announce an esteemed panel, including Maros Sefcovic, Vice President of Inter-Institutional Relations and Foresight at the European Commission. Welcome this morning, Vice President.
Good morning.
Emma Navarro, Vice President of the European Investment Bank. And we're very pleased to have Emma with us today. Unfortunately, she will have to leave a bit early on, but thanks for joining us the same. Eva Carli, MEP, and a member of the ITRA committee, who will be joining us a bit later on, and Abraham Liu, Chief Representative to the EU institutions for Huawei. And we're going to start today's event with a series of short opening statements of 2 minutes each from each of our panelists, followed by a fairly free-flowing conversation, which will be peppered with input from our audience tuning in all over the world. To tell us a bit more about how you can get involved in today's debate, I'd like to hand over briefly now to my co-moderator for the event, Dan Sobovitz. Dan.
Hi, Sam. So as you can see, I built a virtual studio to look a little bit like your place. We're all broadcasting from home, but virtually we're in the same place. So welcome, audience and panelists. As Sam just said, this is going to be a very interactive discussion, and there are a few ways for you to actually join this discussion. The first one, you might be watching us right now on the YouTube channel of Euractiv. Over there, you can only watch. You might be seeing it also embedded on some other social media. Another way for you to be a bit more active in the discussion and get involved, I'm now broadcasting on my LinkedIn account where you can add comments, and I will look at the comments, and if you have anything interesting to say to the panels, I will make sure that they get it from you. So do log in on LinkedIn and you can find the live stream over there. Otherwise, Vice President Sefcovic kindly offered to share it on his massive LinkedIn account. So I will also monitor his account. And if there's anything interesting in the comments over there, I will make sure to bring it also to the conversation. Last but definitely not least, we have the Euractiv community invited to join us on Slido. And on Slido, you will see, if you're logged in from there, three different columns. You have one for Q&A, if you have a question. You have one for ideas, if you have a suggestion to one of our esteemed panelists. And finally, there's one for polls. And the way the polls are going to work, I will try to get the opinion of our viewers on some of the topics we're going to discuss. For example, just to see that it's working, I'd like to ask you briefly, where are you from? Where are you connecting in from? So you should, if you're on Slido, and I will ask our technical team to show the results on the screen, can you please answer, where are you tuning in from? We have a bit of a technical glitch, but I do, and the Slido audience is seeing the answer. So we have a lot of Brussels. We have a lot of some Germany, some from all over Europe, Lithuania, Italy, Poland, I see, Denmark, Serbia, France, UK. So we're being watched. We're a bit all over the place. So with this kickoff question, I'd like to maybe a slightly more serious one. I'd like to ask you, how confident do you feel about Europe's ability to kickstart its economy after the crisis? I'm now giving you an option of a scale of 1 to 5. And I'm asking, we have about 200 people now connected on Slido. I'm not sure if our panelists are able to see. I think now you should be able to see the screen. I would say there's some careful optimism there. A few very pessimists, a few outliers who are very optimistic, and most of us are somewhere in between. So I will let you continue voting, and while you're voting, I will hand back to Sam to start the conversation. Sam?
Thanks very much, Dan. So this is the nature of modern policy events, I suppose, getting involved to this degree. It's fantastic to see the audience engagement there. Without further ado, we've got just under an hour, so it's a good time for us to get started now. I'd first like to hand over to the Vice President to deliver his 2-minute opening statement. Vice President.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sam. I'll try to be very brief and really focus only on three points: on the economic aspects of this crisis, on the fact what the COVID-19 did with accelerating the mega trends, including the technology one. And then I would like just to say a few words on the resilience, which is such a, I would say, new element, very important one on the horizon. As you, I'm sure, noticed, I mean, this week we published our economic forecast for this year and the next year, and it's a pretty grim one. I mean, we are expecting the drop of economic performance by 7.5%. And how we would emerge from this crisis would very much depend on what kind of response we can offer. Therefore, we as the European Commission are coming, I believe, within a very short period of time with a new proposal for our 7 years budget, but also with a very massive investment recovery fund, which we hope with the help of EIB, and I'm sure that Emma would be very busy with that to make sure that we will bring adequate investment into our economy. What we want to avoid from the past is to invest in outdated technology. So it's quite clear that if it comes to the new, modern, green, sustainable, and telecommunications and ICT technologies, they clearly would be at the forefront. I think all of us, we went through such a digital crash course over the last few years, and I could do on the computer the things I was not able to do just a couple of weeks ago. And I think that this was the same for many people in Europe. I would say big businesses, small businesses, the governments just relied heavily on the digital technologies, and without them, we simply wouldn't be able to function as a modern society. So that's, I would say, the positive side. Negative side, of course, is that how this new platform and technical giants would use this new position in place, these new powers, and therefore I think we have to be very, very careful what's happening with our data and how we are going to regulate that space within which they operate. Last thing I would mention is the resilience. I think we discovered in Europe that in many areas, and I think it was more obvious in the health area, that we are very much dependent on few sources, few countries, and that some of the global value chains, which did a great job in making the globalizations, bringing us a good products for very reasonable price, simply would have to be rethought. And in some cases, we would need to diversify the sources of raw materials or spare parts. In some of the cases, we would need to have a strategic stockpiles of the very important critical materials. And in other cases, we probably would need to reshore and make sure that this new system of the global value chains is updated to these new realities. It's one of the things on which I really would like also to focus our foresight work in the European Commission, because even in these new technologies like renewables, which would give us more autonomy and lower the dependence on the fossil fuels, at the same time, we see that it increases our dependence on the materials which we are importing from very far, mostly from China, and we need them for solar panels, we need them for computers, we need them for all these new technologies. So just simply would have to also maybe learn from the past, and as we did the diversification with the energy sources, we need to proceed with the diversification of these new technologies and raw materials of the future. So this is, I would say, the situation as I see it right now, and thank you very much for your kind invitation to participate in this important discussion.
Great. Thank you very much for your opening statement, Vice President. Some really interesting points there, particularly extending from the rather bleak economic forecast there, but also messages about how we can avoid investing in outdated technologies without, of course, compromising our high standards in the fields of data protection. I'd like to hand over now to Emma Navarro from the European Investment Bank to give her 2-minute opening statement. Emma.
Good morning to everyone from Spain. It's a pleasure to be here in this important discussion. Tomorrow we will be celebrating Europe's Day, and this celebration will take place in unprecedented times. We are in the middle of this pandemic that is distorting our lives and has caused one of the greatest shocks since World War II. And it is clear that we need a European, a joint and determined European response commensurate of the challenges that we are facing. And in this regard, the European Investment Bank is firmly committed to be part of this response. And this response is taking shape. We already had the European finance ministers in April agreeing on a 500 billion package, and the EIB was part of this package, to provide finance to address the most pressing needs, to protect workers, to protect business and the countries from the most pressing needs from COVID. But of course, when the health emergency is under control, we will need to kickstart the economy, fostering those investments needed to rebuild and strengthen the European economy. And it is obvious that promoting and strengthening the digital economy must be one of the key foundations of our investment plans. And there is no other choice, because the digital economy and new technologies play a critical factor for the European competitiveness, for the European productiveness, and this means for our future prosperity. And we are already lagging behind when we compare ourselves with some of the other regions, such as the US and China. So we cannot afford to undertake these efforts. And investing in digital means investing in a sustainable and more resilient economy. And for the EIB, this is clear. We are one of the international financial institutions with largest exposure to the digital economy, and the digital and innovation would continue to be one of our priority for investments. And I think that the COVID crisis has shown how important a digital economy is, well, for business continuity, but also for fighting the pandemic. And we need to use new digital health solutions that will be also very important for the future. So we need to continue devoting these efforts, and I am, well, I am very happy that the Commission has this as a priority, and we work together as institution, and we will be also supporting this priority. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thank you for your opening statement there, Emma. Some very pressing needs indeed highlighted there in terms of promoting digital economies, and perhaps we can get down into the specificities of achieving that objective a bit later on, and also talk a bit more about the concept of European digital sovereignty amid this current climate. I believe we've been joined now by S&D MEP Eva Kali, who I would now like to give the floor to for her two-minute statement. Eva.
Hi. Thank you for organizing, and I have to agree with what I heard already, saying that we definitely have to be resilient, as our commissioner said. We have to be resilient, and we have to keep being connected. We see we already are so connected that this pandemic spread it super fast. I do believe that since we STOA, Science and Technology Committee, we did a lot of studies on how we can use the new tools we have, the technological tools. We have to invest more in the digital, and I feel and that the realization of the change of priorities has happened really fast. So the new budget definitely will have a priority there. And I think that the layer of green, sustainable and digital will now cross all the sectors. What we have to definitely say is that these are the tools we have to use, but the framework and the values and the principles are the ones we were supposed to be setting in the upcoming and the ongoing, actually, legislation. So what I would point out and highlight is that we definitely have to make sure that this crisis is a health crisis. It will definitely become an economic crisis, and we have to avoid having it becoming a political crisis. So we have to safeguard our democracies. We have to be able to balance how we use these tools in order to avoid, for example, surveillance or like, let's say, exclusion and discrimination. We see this happening, this contact tracing I don't believe it's valuable, actually. I believe it's more valuable to see if you have the symptoms or if you should stay at home and avoid spreading. But definitely to be excluded by public transportation in case you are affected. And I think the technology is not there yet to not make mistakes, and it would definitely be discriminating. So the framework we should have as Europe is highly important. And finally, I feel that we know what we have to do. We have to create more liquidity. We have to give more funding, not more debt for citizens. So we have to invest smarter in high-risk companies, support the SMEs. The innovative ones, they are the ones that survive. So we have to support also the traditional sector. And since we know how we want to proceed as like together as Europe, and we have the vision, we need, and we have the leadership, we have excellent politicians. What we need to do is implement very fast and to avoid any resistance and make sure we will have better coordination next time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eva, for your opening statement. That's much appreciated. Some really interesting points there about increasing Europe's resilience, both in the short and long term. And I was interested by your opinion on contact tracing applications, and maybe we can get more into the detail of that a bit later on. I'd now like to hand the floor to Huawei's representative in today's event. This is the chief representative to the EU institutions, Abraham Liu.
Good morning, everyone. It's my great pleasure to join this discussion. As an industry representative from the ICT industry, actually connectivity is actually what we're all about. During this pandemic, I think, as mentioned by Vice President and other panelists, the digital technology actually played a key role in terms of supporting the communication, and enabling the healthcare remote diagnosis and also remote learning. Actually, our today's webinar could happen because it is supported by the digital infrastructure. And of course, after this pandemic, if you talk about the economy recovery, I firmly believe that the digital technology or the ICT infrastructure will be the fundamental supporter for this, or enabler for this, economy recovery. There are many elements we can mention, regarding the innovation. A lot of new innovation will be supported by the ICT technology. Actually, the new medicines or the vaccines are supported by the AI plus the connectivity technology. And the smart infrastructures, smart cities, smart transportation, or the all this new technology or new economy, to support our economic recovery will be actually enabled by the ICT technology. And again, the green topic, the Green Deal, the sustainability, circular economy, and clean transport, is very much linked or could be, supported by the ICT digital technology. And the ICT technology, ICT itself, could be also a key contributor to the Green Deal. As a end-to-end ICT infrastructure provider and also smart devices provider, Huawei have been in Europe for 20 years, and the only job is working with our customer to provide a reliable connectivity to the European citizens. And that is extremely, our first priority during this pandemic crisis, is to ensure there is a reliable connectivity. And, together with my 14,000 European colleagues, and we committed to do the same, to make sure European will be benefited from this first high level standard ICT infrastructure, and we're committed to support the European economy from recovery after the pandemic.
Great. Thank you very much, Abraham, for your opening statements there. Without further ado, let's get straight into today's panel discussion now. And I'd like to turn first to the Vice President. Starting off on a rather general point with regards to the recovery fund that the Commission is due to announce over the next couple of weeks or so. Is there anything of anything specific you can reveal about the details of the recovery fund so far in the context of European ICT industries? And will this recovery fund plan any specific instruments to help the resilience of technology on the block generally?
Yeah, thank you very much for that question, also for the interventions on our panelists, because I think they very well reflected the difficult weeks the whole world is going through. And it was the same with us in the European Commission. After the first shocks, I mean, our first energy was channeled to, I would say, saving the lives, making sure that our health professionals would have enough materials, that we would keep borders open for the trucks delivering all these health materials or foodstuff, and simply to make sure that the European economy is functioning. And we used also the time to prepare for what is coming next. So the second stage was to save the jobs, as many jobs as possible. And you saw the several measures we have undertaken to make sure that people can stay in the jobs, even if the companies are idling. That was our insurance, so-called SURE measure, which we adopted to guarantee the people that even in these difficult times, they shouldn't worry about their jobs, and that we can focus how to restart the economy. And that's the priority for these days. So if you are talking about the combined power of the 7 years budget and this recovery fund, we are talking about the trillions, not because it's a fancy number, but because, I mean, this is how much money we are 100% sure we would need. And we would need it quickly, and we would need it front-loaded in especially this and the next 2 years. And this is the construction with which we are now conducting very delicate, as you can imagine, bilateral contacts with our member states, because we would like to present these twin proposals. I would call it MFF plus, multi-annual financial perspective, meaning the budget for 7 years plus the recovery fund. And of course, what I would now call upon the all LinkedIn community, what we would need is a good project. I believe, and I think Emma would confirm it, because this was our discussion from the past, for the good project, there is always a good financial support. But what we've been learning from the past, be it with the Juncker Investment Fund, or very often even with the European budget, that a lot of this money was unspent, because simply there was not, let's say, good quality of the project, or they've been not ready, or they've been not modern enough. So for us, what would be very important is that the financial support would go to the project which would help us to bounce forward, meaning to invest in modern technology, to invest in digitizing of our economy, to make sure that what we do is sustainable. And we see this twin revolution between digital and Green Deal as the new growth strategy for the European Union. And of course, as I said in my introductory remarks, we will pay much closer attention to the resilience of our economy, of our companies, of our member states, and also of our economy. So these would be, I would say, the three criteria. But I would say that to the business community already right now, I would invite them to think in what to invest, how to make the recovery fast, modernizing element of our new economy. And I'm sure that policymakers, Emma, myself, and the national governments will be looking for the way how we can bring the necessary financial support for these modernizing tools.
Great. Thank you very much, Vice President. I'd like to turn now to Emma, actually, on this subject of an MFF Plus, and the question that what should we be investing in, really, as part of any broader financial instruments? And maybe you could give us a bit of an insight into the EIB's recently announced €25 billion guarantee, which I think the EIB stated is designed predominantly for high-risk businesses. Which businesses do you regard as high-risk in the current context?
Thank you. Well, this €25 billion guarantee was part of the European response that the European ministers agreed on April. So this is part of the emergency response in support of the real economy. And the idea is to create a fund that will be financed by contributions from member states And this fund will support EIB investments. And we will be able to finance and to go into projects that are more, that are riskier than the standard projects that we finance. And this will enable us to remain financially, to keep our financial strength at the same time that we can provide this support to the real economy in this exceptional time. So the idea is not that we consider some sectors more risky. It's the project and the type of financing that we are providing. And the idea is to be able also to scale up our support, because our experts have estimated that with this guarantee, we will be able to finance projects all, for an amount up to 200 billion. And this is because we will be able to have a multiplier effect. So the total financing that we will trigger with this guarantee will be bigger. And the type of things that we will do, for example, is providing risk-sharing instruments to banks in order to be able to help banks continue financing SMEs. And we know that, for example, in all national programs, support programs, we have a lot of guarantees schemes. And we want to provide this type of also guarantee schemes, because we see that there is a difference between the type of efficiency of the support of different countries. And we think that it is important to keep the level playing field in Europe. Of course, no sector will be excluded. The investment would be risky in the sense that this will require more capital than normal investments, because, for example, in different type of financial structures, we will try to go to the riskier part of the financial structure. For example, in a securitization, that is an important tool to provide financing, to help banks provide financing to SMEs, we will go to the riskier tranches. And we will do this in collaboration with national promotional banks and with commercial banks. And the idea is to support SMEs. So we will have a big focus on SMEs, but also innovative SMEs. And we are designing now how to also provide a new innovative financing, such as venture debt or equity with this instrument, but also mid-caps and corporates. But of course, this is the emergency response. In the recovery, we will continue having as a priority the support of those investments that are key for European growth, and the digital economy is one of our priority with other innovation targets. And in fact, as I said before, we can provide, in the last 10 years, we have provided around 31 billion euros to the digital economy. And we remain very committed to try to support this type of investments that are critical for Europe. We will also try to not only to provide debt at good terms and very attractive maturities, because we provide long-term financing, but also to try to see how to support those startup companies and more innovative companies with risk mitigants, and also with venture capital or equity, which are tools that are needed to let those companies grow.
And indeed, the EIB has also recently announced a partnership with the World Health Organization outside of European's borders in parts of Africa as well. And if we have time later on, we could maybe talk about that a bit more, but I'm very conscious of the fact that you have to leave shortly, but maybe that's a subject for another day. I'd like to come to Eva Kaili now and just ask a bit more about your position as chair of the Science and Technology Options Assessment Panel that recently published some research on the use of artificial intelligence in the context of the coronavirus. How do you think AI can be leveraged in order to help fight the current outbreak in Europe? And of course, earlier you touched on some concerns that you have with regards to the use of AI in terms of surveillance. Perhaps you could tell us a bit more about your concerns there, Eva.
Yes, thank you. First, I have definitely to say that if we had Vice President Sefcovic, because we worked together in the previous term, as a president now, I really would feel that we would have the foresight to prepare and coordinate much better. Because one thing we saw is that the European Center for Prevention and Disease Control had lack of coordination. We had 80% of data, but without common standards, which means we don't have good quality of data. If you have data as a scientist, then you can use them to understand the patterns of the disease. You can understand how it spreads. You can use algorithms to see how it might spread even more. And then you can also add different factors and feed the to tell if temperature, change or affect the spread of the disease, if pollution would affect that. And you can definitely help doctors to exchange and scientists to exchange their data and best cases and see which treatment actually had best results. So if you don't have that, basically you are blindfolded while you're trying to treat the disease. So if you could see, it's been like basically 2 months, it seems like much longer, that we have tried to see what science and technology will bring us in order to go back to normal. So you see that there is no way to do it without new technologies. AI is an algorithm that you decide the metrics, you put a lot of data you cannot process, and it can process it very, very fast to give you a solution, to give you either also a decision or to explain what is happening, to find the patterns, depends how you use it. And we have seen that we have IoT, we have sensors, you can get a lot of data, you can get from wearable devices the temperature of someone so that he can know, he can understand faster if he should visit a doctor, if he should like check other symptoms. So we have all these tools. We have 3D printers. You can print at home a small particle that could change a simple mask, a summer mask that you can buy from a store, into a ventilator in case you cannot manage the need that exists in the hospitals. So we have these technologies at place. What we need to do is to have the foresight that our Vice President expressed to make sure that it will be a priority, and we will not go back in the old model we had, where these things were like a vision, but it would not, they would not happen fast because the budget would not be agreed. And some countries, and I know our Vice President of the EIB, Emma Navarro, has a very difficult task, because we need countries to give more money now and respond to the crisis altogether in Europe, as we saw in different, in other countries, to give back trust and confidence to citizens. So we have the tools, we have the technology, we know what are the financial tools we need to use. EIB is a bank that it's basically non-profit, so it can and send the liquidity where it's mostly needed and affected. But what we need to do is to make sure that these things will be implemented, these ideas will be implemented. So we need excellent political knowledge and foresight. And as for the contact tracing, I heard about like having a medical certificate online on your mobile phone in order to travel. I understand that if you balance lack of privacy and safety, everybody will prefer to be safe, better safe than, you know, having somebody being around. Knowing that he's affected. Could happen is that if you have fever, you definitely have coronavirus. And we don't even know if the technology is there yet to make sure that it would actually understand if you are asymptomatic, if you can transmit it. The test, we don't know if 100% would work. So we don't have the technology, and this could lead into a great percentage of people being excluded by different ways to work or to move or to transport. What we have to do instead is spend money to make sure they will have choices, they will have alternatives, that they can be treated at home, that we will use telecommunications in order and 5G networks in order to be able to provide them with the healthcare they need, even at home. So we have to use tools in a better way to protect the humans and not to try to use this as an excuse to be a threat for our democratic values. This is all I wanted to say. And we have 10 technologies we explored and studies that are online under our EPRS. And you can see how they can be used with concrete examples. And I would say it's really amazing how the crowd intelligence can work and bring us amazing ideas if we have the will to fund them, to fund solutions very fast.
Great, thanks so much, Eva. So it's all about funding innovative solutions, really. Before turning to the audience for some of their input, I just wanted to ask Abraham Liu about the position of Huawei amid this crisis, which is it's a tough position to be in. Obviously, your company comes from a country which was the origin of the current coronavirus pandemic. How does Huawei respond in Europe to the current crisis? What sort of measures have you been putting in place so far? We're very aware of your various mask donation schemes, but in the world of technology, are you changing the way you do business at all in Europe? And also on this subject of contact tracing applications, we're well aware, of course, of Google's attitude and stance towards Huawei in terms of the ability to use Google software. Will contact tracing applications developed by Apple and Google be able to be used on Huawei smartphones in Europe?
Thank you, Sam. Since January, you know, when the, you know, the pandemic or the situation in China becomes a bit serious, I think everybody, you know, all of my colleagues has been, you know, every citizens, you know, and now worldwide, I think has been heavily affected the way we work with, we live, we interact with each other has been heavily, you know, affected. And specifically in Huawei, I think the first priority is to protect our staff, because as I said earlier, you know, we are working worldwide in 170 countries to provide the connection for more than 3 billion population. So in this serious situation, you know, pandemic, our, you know, to ensure the connectivity by protecting our staff is the number one things we have done. Of course, we have been working very closely with the industry peers, the partners, to provide, to use the technology to help, you know, the healthcare industry to handle this current situation. For example, you know, like in China and also in Europe, we are working with the industry partners to have the AI-assisted CT diagnosis, you know, of the coronavirus, improve the diagnosis efficiency from 12 minutes to 10 seconds, and enables patients to be treated in a timely manner. And more than 60 hospitals have deployed this solution in China by the end of March. And we have the AI-assisted drug screening, you know, which help the researchers, you know, are able to finish 8,506 drugs screening in 7 days instead of several months. And they have the indoor multifunction robots, and you have an autonomous delivery vehicle, and also the experts, you know, worldwide can exchange their experience, you know, from the internet, from the webinar like this. I think that benefited, you know, is some unique role we feel proud, you know, my staff, my colleagues has contributed to part of this, joint, pandemic handling worldwide. I think only by united, by solidarity, you know, this kind of virus is a common enemy for the human being. So we see that the solidarity, the joint unity from different part of the world, from different industry, you know, will be, you know, the real, you know, precondition or necessity for in a current situation. And the second point I want to share with you is every crisis, you know, it means you know, the crisis and the dangerous part and also the opportunity. In fact, if you recall, you know, the year during the year 2003, you know, during the SARS, that kind of similar crisis situation in China, now the big names in China like Alibaba or Tencent actually were, you know, began to boom in their business since then. And we see a lot of SMEs, you know, have a lot of creative ideas, you know, in China or in the part of the world, you know, to stimulate by the current situation, you know, use the technology to find a solution and not give a lot of opportunity and hopes for the industry. And as you talk about the tracing technology, I think, as you know that, you know, if you talk about specific, there are so many ways, there are so many companies that develop the kind of apps or QR code, they call it, in terms of tracing the suspicious, you know, source of the virus. And of course the new technology is have different kind of impact, you know, specifically about the apps developed by Google and Apple. I think as far as it is approved by the authorities, while we are not actually a apps developer, we are like the smartphone provider. So anything has been approved by the local authorities, by the European authorities, which has the compliance to the GDPR. You know, then it technically there should be no problem of loading those kind of apps to the Huawei smartphone, in order to support this kind of function, to support the pandemic handling from the government for the public healthcare purpose. I think we committed to have to find any possible means, you know, to handle the current situation in a joint way, you know, across countries. Because this kind of virus is really a common enemy for the human being, and it does not tell people, differentiate people from the different passport or different color of the skin, you know. So that is why I think it's very important to have a united, you know, across the borders, you know, author from different countries in solidarity. That is very important.
Great. Thank you, Abraham. So the message is there's no technical restrictions to Google and Apple applications being used on Huawei handsets for now that we know of, but maybe we can come back to that one a bit later on. I want to hand over now to Dan for a bit of input from our audience, who I understand have been writing in with their own questions. Dan.
So indeed, I've also been running a short survey while both Eva, Kylie and Abraham were talking about using tracing apps. As you can see, our limited, your active audience seems to be fairly favorable of this option and comfortable with the idea, although quite a few, 1 out of 5, are still undecided. They've also been very active in asking great questions. So I would say I can group the questions on the Marshall Plan into two. Some of them were more on the geostrategy of the Marshall Plan, especially vis-a-vis other world powers, namely China, as we have Huawei around the table. So some people were wondering whether the new Marshall Plan should also position Europe vis-a-vis, back then it was the USSR, maybe now it's China. Some were wondering about value sharing with China, or should Europe even use Chinese technology altogether? So that's more on the geostrategy. And then when it comes to the actual essence of what the new so-called Marshall Plan should invest in, there were many people wondering about how to take into account new trends like teleworking. How do we match real needs of this investment, real needs on the ground? Some people are wondering about low-skilled workers, accessibility, et cetera. So, I mean, the comments were going in different directions. I cannot give you all of them. One person, I will only mention this viewer, Aline Chivo, I hope I pronounce your name right, on Slido, was actually quoting a recently released EIB Digitization Index, which shows that EU falls short of the US. Only 4 EU countries are ahead of the US in terms of digitalization. And she's also wondering how this kind of reinvestment could enhance. So a lot of questions that I just threw at you, but before I hand over, I would just maybe to just kind of wrap this input into the kind of investment that we should make and ask once again our viewers, what kind of sectors do you think that this new so-called Marshall Plan should invest in? So I hand back to Sam and to the panel maybe to respond on the geostrategy with China and on the different sectors that we should invest in specifically. And while you are discussing, I invite again the Slido audience to answer what you think, which are the most important sectors that the new Marshall Plan should focus on. Back to you, Sam.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you. So we've got 10 minutes left, so this will have to be a flash discussion. But I'd like to go take up this point of the geostrategy of the Marshall Plan. Of course, I'm reminded of Commission President von der Leyen's comments when she took office that this would be a geopolitical commission. So perhaps I can turn to you, Vice President, and ask, what elements of the Marshall Plan do you think will be geostrategic? And will they help to position Europe more favorably and more competitively in the global economy?
Thank you. Thank you very much for that question, because clearly, as it was said before, we have to turn this crisis into the opportunity and bring this massive investment into making sure that this would be really modernizing transformation of the European economy and also the way how we Europeans live, behave and position ourselves on the global scale. I think that also during this crisis, we have witnessed that there is big demand for Europe to be this fair player who is fighting for multilateralism, who is not forgetting about the others, like developing countries, like countries in our neighborhood, like Western Balkans. Actually, I think that was the reason why the Commission and our president have been chosen to start this donor process on funding of the vaccine, because it was quite clear that if we Europeans do it, we want to do it right, meaning to make sure that the vaccine is good, that it's available for everyone on this planet, and that we would be ready to provide the funding that this would happen as soon as possible. And the response was overwhelming, almost 7.5 billion euros just in one day. And of course, this pledging conference is still continuing. So that's just one example how Europe wants to position herself on the global scale. I think that we are also very much needed in the world where we see this increased tension between China and United States of America. And I think that to have the world to be better place, clearly the European presence must be more felt. We have to be able to adopt our decision much, much faster. And we have to realize that not only economically, but also politically, we have that potential and we must play that role of the global leader. As you know, I mean, with the United States, the EU and US, we are allies going even through some difficult periods, but this is, I would say, the very strong bond which was developed in the post-war period. And with China, we became very important economic partners. I think if I remember correctly, we are number one trading power for China. And the China is number two trading partner for us. So the relationship is massive and is growing. And I remember when I had the opportunity to talk to President Xi and the leadership in China during the last summit on Belt and Road, our request for improving the relationship was very, very, very simple one. What I asked was, let's China treat the European companies in China in the same way how we treat the Chinese company in Europe. That's, I would say, that the reciprocity, this is what we would like to achieve. I think that's what is very important from the point of values. That's on the point of how we do the business, how we would increase the mutual trust and confidence. And this is, I think, how we would then position ourselves geopolitically. And if you allow me just to elaborate on one point, which I think shouldn't miss from our discussion, and this is the role of SMEs and regulation. I think Eva Kiely was elaborating on that a little bit. Just as a pre-announce, because we are talking to the LinkedIn audiences on next week, we are starting the Fit for Future platform, which should be clearly designed to make sure that our smaller businesses would benefit fully from this pivot to digitization. We would like to simplify our regulation and make it digital by default. So we would welcome any kind of response, any kind of suggestions we would get from our audience, that which processes, which SMEs found very complicated right now, should be digitized, could be digitized, and how we can make this whole sector of the economy more modern. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice President. And you can see on our live streaming service now some word clouds, popular word clouds popping up there related to if there were a Marshall Plan for Europe, which sectors should it focus on? Energy, health, food, SMEs, very important there.
And I can tell you that it very much match also the sectors we would like to support, the green energy, digital education, renovations, health sectors, SMEs, and so on and so forth. So I'm glad that we have also the feedback, which clearly confirms that our thinking is very much aligned with the thinking of our audience.
It definitely sounds like you're preaching to the choir,
yeah.
Vice President. Abraham, I wanted to bring you in quickly just before I turn to Eva Kali. In terms of EU-China relations, it's been a testing couple of weeks, particularly with regards to the European External Action Service. The Vice President made a comment there in terms of mutual trust and confidence, increasing mutual trust and confidence between the EU and China, as well as the principle of reciprocity. Maybe we're talking here about liberalizing China's markets, opening up their markets for European products as well. What's your response to that, Abraham?
I believe, you know, in the past many, many years, there is a international order, the globalization has been very well developed, you know, under the leadership of, let's say, US. But since the US, you know, began to escape from some of the multilateral, you know, mechanism, then a lot of problem happened. I think that is why I said, you know, it's extremely important that where, you know, the EU as a typical or a successful example of unite in diversity, the solidarity, to take the lead and join the hands with China to embrace the multilateralism, to provide the world kind of certainty. Because while we are a company benefited from the globalization and the multilateralism, and we're supporting, committed to support this kind of approach. Otherwise, you know, with the disruption of many initiatives like the climate, like climate change, like many other multilateral discussion now, you know, the WHO in a way sometimes also be threatened, you know. So that is why I do think, I agree with the Vice President, you know, Mr. Vice President, not the China EU, you know, enhanced collaboration will benefit to everyone. And actually, there will be a unique opportunity this year to strengthen those, you know, this kind of ties between EU and China even more. There, you know, there is a planned summit later in next week in Germany in September, you know, there are a lot of, you know, a lot more interaction between EU and China. In I would quote the words from the EU ambassador to China earlier this week. The world initially met the crisis in an uncoordinated fashion, but it is now clear that the only way out of it is together. And we believe there are many domains, apart from the economic, you know, relationship, even for the future cyber, you know, the trust, worldwide governance mechanism in the cyber world. There is a great potential for the China and EU to sit down and discuss about what will be the secured digital space for the human being in the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, great. So a lot more opportunities in the future there. We'll have to see if the Leipzig conference actually goes ahead or not. I know it's scheduled for September, but there are rumours that it could be delayed. Eva Kali, I'd like to turn back to you now on this geostrategic point in the context of EU-China-US relations here. And I want to ask you, what's your opinion on how the concept of European digital sovereignty will perhaps come into the Marshall Plan?
Well, that's the question that we have definitely tried to answer, and we had to answer already before this crisis. What we have to say is that we have to work together. We have to work together at a global level because these are global challenges that, as we saw, cannot be stopped by borders. So we definitely have to deal with them together. What we have to do in order to achieve that is to have also a set of principles that we will agree on. So one thing I believe we have to do is to make sure that even the Health World Organization will have a reshuffling in order to work more efficiently next time. We have to agree in principles on how we exchange our data. We have to definitely have the principle of reciprocity there. And since we have already entered a survival mode for 2020, and we have to deal with many uncertainties, we have to make sure we will prioritize very well. And if we have to deal with transportation, and this is a sector that was heavily affected, definitely have to collaborate and find ways to collaborate globally. Of course, to have uninterrupted supply chains, because if you need something that is beyond EU and you cannot bring it in EU, and you have it in EU and you cannot deliver it to the specific member state that has ordered something, then these are barriers and resistance that we don't have time to wait for that. You saw what happened when Italy ordered safety equipment and it delayed for just a few days, but this was crucial in order to avoid to have so many victims there from this pandemic. So what we have to do is to work together, but on a specific framework, principles, and to make sure that we will have also common standards. And one thing I could say that maybe we need to address at this point is to have also standards and a digital tax following the OECD initiative and agree to that. I think these are global tools for collaboration. So we have to be pragmatic. We definitely have to work together, but we have to agree the terms that we will work together. We cannot have it for Europe to follow specific rules and be open and work with countries that they have a different set of values there. So I think what would be fair is to have this discussion. We say that every crisis is an opportunity. This crisis has to be an opportunity to make a leap ahead. And I think it's very important for us to have the data, to have the monitor and the map of what happened of this disease and the sectors that have been affected, and constantly reevaluate that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Some really interesting points there, particularly on digital tax. And I mean, we could have a whole event on the subject of digital tax. It's really the gift that keeps on giving. And it's something that's received, of course, a lot of support in the European Parliament from the socialists in particular. So maybe that's a subject for another day. But unfortunately, we've run right out of time now. But before we go, I'd like to turn back to Dan very quickly to hear some final comments from our audience tuning in all over the world.
So indeed, very active participation, mostly on Slido. So I just kicked off the question about Eva's last point about the special tax, which seems to be gaining popularity also among your active viewers. But as we are running out of time, and I know some of the panelists have to go, I will just conclude with maybe this question. How did you like it? This was, we were experimenting here. This was quite a complicated experiment on our end, I have to say. We're using a lot of different tools at the same time to try to bring people from different platforms and make the discussion for once not closed, but open and inclusive. So I hope you've enjoyed it. From my end, I'm in a different country now broadcasting as my colleague Sam. So this was, give us a slack. This was a complicated operation. I hope you've enjoyed it. From me in Berlin, thank you for being with us, all of you panelists and viewers. I was having fun. I hope you were as well.
Thanks so much, Dan. And now I'd like to turn back to our panelists for a quick 30-second closing statement each on the subject of how technology can play a role in the future European Marshall Plan. And let's turn to the Vice President for his closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sam and Dan. And I really would like to thank both of you and your active and LinkedIn for offering us this interaction with the citizens. Tomorrow we have a Europe Day. We're supposed to open the conference on the future of Europe. We know because of the current crisis, this is not possible. So I very much appreciate it that we engage with them on the topic, which I'm sure is very interesting, not only for the young generation, but for all businesses. The second thing I would say is that this crisis really serves as an accelerator. And what we would see, I'm pretty sure, would be transition to a new normal, which would be more digital, which would be more sustainable, and where we would put much more focus on resilience. And together with Eva, I believe we will do the best use of data which are available to improve our quality of foresight, so we will not so shell-shocked and surprised where the next crisis would come, and we would be better prepared for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us here today, Vice President. Eva Kali, your closing statements, please.
Well, I would just have to say that now the priorities change. Should digital is the highest of the agenda. I think the funding we were discussing before the pandemic, it was like 10 billion. I think it will increase. And I agree with our Vice President. We will accelerate this process. And I think we have increased funding and everything will go through the angle of digital and green. So it's going to be an angle. It doesn't have to be a priority anymore. I think it's going to change all the sectors. And I will steal this quote that I think Lagarde stole from Draghi. We have to do whatever it takes in order to be stronger after this pandemic. And thank you for organizing that.
Thank you so much for joining us here today, Eva. Abraham Liu, your closing statement, please.
Again, thank you for inviting me to join this interesting discussion today. And Huawei, as I mentioned, we have been here in Europe for 20 years. And we committed to have another, you know, we are very excited to join with the European industries, you know, for the next 20 years journey. ICT previously is only about connectivity, but in the future is more about a secured ICT infrastructure, is more about enable the other industry, you know, in their digital transformation. And we see a lot of opportunities, and we also see a lot of challenges. As I mentioned earlier, the worldwide need actually the policymakers to pay attention to the future cyberspace governance or the international mechanism. And that is somewhere I'm looking forward to work with the policymakers here with the EU to provide, you know, the certainty for the industry. And of course, I truly hope, you know, there will be more opportunities, you know, for us to build the trust and share ideas about the solutions to global problems and challenges, as we have done today. What the world needs now more than ever is stability and strong ties between nations. And I want to thank you all for listening to my ideas today. And please don't hesitate to get in touch with my office here in Brussels. You know, if you would like to discuss with anything, you know, about Huawei, about the industry, about the ICT.
Thank you so much, Abraham, for joining us here today. It's much appreciated. So it looks like we can expect some sort of a digital, green, geostrategic Marshall Plan in the next couple of weeks. We will just have to be patient and wait for more information on that issue. Thank you so much for joining us, to all our panelists and our audience tuning in from all over the world. It's been a pleasure having this discussion with you this morning. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.